Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO. It's a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 378, and it's proudly brought to you by the always growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you're listening and might want to support the show, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. My name is James Stacey, and I'm joined as ever by my friend and co-host, Jason Heaton. Jason, how are we doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. Not much new to report on my end. It's just, rolling on into summer here. It feels properly, haven't put on socks for a few days, and the garden's growing fast, and yeah, I'm loving it.
Man, I feel like a lizard. Like if I feel kind of slow or sluggish, I just get outside in the sun.
yeah.
Turns out I might just be cold blooded. I'm not sure.
Yeah, right.
It just feels so nice to have summer kind of here, and we haven't bothered a ton with the AC yet. We've just been leaving the windows and doors open to the house, let a breeze through. It's an absolute win for sure. What a great time of year early June is.
Oh yeah, I have my coffee outside on the patio and dinner outside in the evening. And then like the big thing for me is, I've become such not a student of the weather, but just so hyper aware of the weather because of my twice daily dog walks, and especially the one first thing in the morning. I can just kind of gauge the season change by the articles of clothing I have to wear or don't have to wear. And it's sure. I finally put away this thin pair of gloves that I had kept by the back door. Because it was just a couple of weeks ago that it was still in the 40s Fahrenheit here in the mornings. And I was like, do I really have to wear gloves and, a jacket? And it's just, boy, it's nice to step out in, shorts and a t-shirt to walk the dog. It's great.
Dude, you go the whole day in like a bathing suit, and you're like, I just got to find some water.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's been great. And talking about great things from the summer, we do have updates on our wind up Chicago plans. So Jason and I will be in town Friday through Sunday. We've got a bunch of things going on, but the big one for those of you listening would be Friday night. Our event with Citizen will be at a spot called Forbidden Root in Chicago from 7 to 9. And I would simply say stay tuned likely to the next episode or to the Slack in the next couple days for a forthcoming RSVP. We have room for a lot of people, but we still need an RSVP. Because there is a not inconsiderable cost per person attached to it. So we want to make sure that we can actually float that cost, certainly with citizens' help. So stay tuned for the RSVP. Jason, any other details about Forbidden Root? It looked like a pretty solid sort of brew pub scenario.
Yeah, this isn't a place that I'm personally familiar with, but it came on some recommendations through Slack. So, thanks for the crowdsourced, mind meld when it came to sourcing a place. I tried a few others that people recommended, and those were either full up or closed down or not available. And Forbidden Root has turned out to be a good option. They're very responsive, and the menu looks decent, and it just should be a nice venue for it. And then, I'm not going to give anything away, but we've got some cool swag worked out for this.
Yeah. I
think that's going to be fun too.
I never realized that to keep up with events, whether it's the marathon parties, the Chicago thing, a recent strap launch that went out on TGN's Slack, I never realized how much of my time would be based in ordering and kind of helping design stickers, or really I lean, of course, on Evan at Staycom Industries and his team to design the stickers. And I just kind of say, that looks cool. Let's go this way. I'll do that one. But it's a lot of, I do a lot of sticker accounting currently. Where are they? How many do we have? I'm not against it. Maybe that's a good business line of business for me is stickers, but yeah. We do a lot of that. And yeah, we're working with Citizen on a real piece of merch, or not merch, swag. That should be really fun. So I'm pumped to see that come together as well. And obviously a big shout out to Neil and Mari and the team at Citizen for working with us on this. Looking forward to it.
Well, in other news, you've got, if I wouldn't call it sad news, but some somber news in the family or a kind of a change on your end.
If we're recapping what went on in the last week, the main thing that happened to me and mine would be the passing of my grandmother. So my final grandparent has passed on. She was in her 95th year, surrounded by her family, had a chance to catch up with a lot of people over the last couple of years. So she went very peacefully, and she's a great lady who will certainly be missed. I don't put any of my personal life on social media, but I do dabble here or there on the show. And, my grandma was one of the first people that really taught me that adventure was important, and that new experiences were this kind of the spice of life. She lived all over the world. and you know, the feedback after her passing has come from, you know, all parts of the world as well. So, you know, rest in peace to my grandmother, Jerry. And yeah, so that's kind of the main thing that happened to me. I was in New York City last week, but just until Friday morning. We had an incredible time at the Hodinkee Happy Hour round two. Huh. For those of you who were able to make it, thank you so much for coming out and you know, drinking some beer and eating some pizza. For those of you who are on the RSVP list, please know that for the next round, which should be the last week of June, this coming month, the last Thursday in June is the plan currently. Stay tuned to the site for details. We will be expanding the RSVP significantly. We're working with Watches of Switzerland to figure out what a real number is. we had a lot of people RSVP and then we had some fall off. I mean, it's 4:30 in New York City on a Thursday. And we're trying to kind of zero in on what the right number is. So I would say cut me a little bit of slack as we sort out the numbers and the costs and that sort of thing. The first time was in excess of 200 people, which has fire code issues, and we did not have enough beer and the pizza disappeared. so we need to zero that in. But also this time we didn't quite have as many as we would have liked, and we ended up with a lot of people on the RSVP list. So if you were on that list and couldn't get approved, you have my sincere apology and also my commitment that we're working on a number that should shift more towards reality. So you can stay tuned for any news on that kind of stuff, both on the show, and then we'll always post on the website to verify that it's actually happening. But the idea is the last Thursday of every month moving forward. So that should be my next trip down to the city. And yeah, other than that, that's all my updates.
Yeah. And before we move on, I your remarks about that kind of bring to mind some of the issues we faced even with our TGN10 strap launch and then this forthcoming citizen collaboration event in Chicago. We've quickly learned, well, not quickly, it's been 10 years since we've been doing all this, but it is difficult. It's such an art form to work out numbers and anticipated response and then not overshoot or undershoot on offerings. Yep. Or, you know, headcounts and things. And you know, certainly we try our best and we appreciate everybody's, you know, patience and understanding with this stuff. And we don't always get it right, but we're working on it. So just wanted to throw that out there.
I'm fairly certain that the numbers will work out really nicely for Chicago.
Yeah.
We have a bit of a history there. We've seen what we can do in Toronto and Vancouver. And I actually spoke to Martin recently. If you've been to our Toronto marathon event, it's at Martin's home and he wants more. He said that still wasn't enough people. Wow. So we're going to buy more beer. We'll get more great food. It'll be fun. But, you know, you're always trying to balance, like, let's fill the room, but also what's the actual cost.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have a partner, Marathon, of course, Citizen, of course. And other times it's just kind of like the Hodinkee one is just from my editorial budget.
Mm-hmm.
And, and, you know, it means what one or two or well, maybe more like three less, you know, freelance stories or something like that, maybe a month.
Yeah.
Sure. I just want the room to be full.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it that not everybody's going to be able to come to everything. But it's a weird kind of task of zeroing in and finding the right kind of solutions for these things. So, we will always, whenever possible, we will always try to do something that has the widest, most open door. Sometimes we're limited by the way businesses operate or the size of a room or the way, you know, straps are produced or that sort of thing. But, you know, we're always doing our best and it is stressful for sure. But I do feel like of all the places in the States that we could pop in, Chicago's the right one and that we're going to have a really good time on Friday night.
All right. Well, with that stuff out of the way, let's do our risk check and then jump into the main topic, which is also kind of a risk check.
You want to go first? As mine will take us right in.
Yeah, exactly. Today I pulled out one that I haven't worn for a while. It's the Paulin Mara. So the watch that I had a hand in kind of the launch collateral, so to speak, you know, the trip to Scotland last year for the launch materials for this watch. And I pulled it out the other day, put it back on the rubber strap it came on, which I have to say is one of the nicer rubber straps around. It kind of feels like one of those I don't remember what you called them, the sort of porthole style rubber isofrane adjacent straps from the 70s. You see them on like a lot of Hoyer divers and stuff. This one kind of has that same feel. And yeah, this watch, it just kind of feels summery. It was a little over a year ago that I got to wear one of these for the first time on that trip to Scotland. And it kind of has brings back some good memories. And it's just kind of a nice, casual, fun piece to wear for the type of weather that we described earlier. It's a great piece.
Yeah, that's a good one. Very summery sort of watch. It kind of falls into that like doxa realm with its kind of shape. It's got kind of some fun elements. It's not super serious.
Yeah.
And it was one, you know, I got to see it at the Toronto show last year. Pullen had a table and I got to see it in person. I was pretty impressed by the quality for the money too. It makes good sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Neat piece for sure. That's a fun one.
All right.
And speaking of quality for money, we're going to jump right into the main topic, which is a rehash of an old series that we used to do or that we've done a few times over the course of the show called On Paper, On Wrist. Shout out to Seen Unseen. I'm not sure it's even existing anymore. And I know they definitely stopped for some time, but it was a podcast where one person saw the movie and the other host saw the trailer and the poster and the IMDb page. And then they talked about it. And they talked about it from kind of the two positions.
Yeah.
And the idea with On Paper, On Wrist is I have a watch or Jason has a watch and the other one doesn't. And we kind of review it from the way that it's presented online and also the way it actually lands on our wrist. And I mean, there's no reason to bury the lead any further as it's the title of the show. We are talking about the Delly Watchco DWC Terra, which is a $42 titanium watch made by Delly Watchco themselves for their fifth anniversary. We'll get into more. Jason, why don't you give a little bit of background on Delly Watchco? But I do want to say very quickly, on a previous episode, I was moving fast and not paying attention to my stupid brain. And I called it Delhi Watchco. It's Delly. Like the area. So it's Delly Watchco. Thank you for those of you both insistent and soft in your suggestion that I mispronounced that. So yeah, Delly Watchco's DWC Terra in titanium. Jason, I figured the right way to start would be a little bit of the on paper. What is Delly Watchco and sort of where, what world do they inhabit in the watch space?
Yeah. So, you know, I think the, obviously, this is a watch from India, given the reference from the name of the company. And the Indian watch industry has not gotten a lot of press or exposure. I've had some time with a watch from Bangalore Watch Company, which was quite nice, and I enjoyed trying that out. And they're kind of another one in that micro brand space, along with Jaipur. And then there are some bigger brands out there like Titan, which is owned by the Tata Group,
Titan,
which also
owns huge.
Jaguar Land Rover. Etc. HMT is another kind of older brand that's been around a long time, but you know, you just don't see a lot, at least in North America and probably in Europe, of watches from India that are kind of taken as seriously as the Swiss and Japanese these days. But I think that's starting to change with some unique offerings. And the Delly Watch Company was actually founded in 2020. That I got to hand it to these guys. It was a tough year to start a company, right? I would say, given what happened that year. But it was founded by Anish Dandwani. And at least with this watch, and I believe some of their others, the product design is largely done by someone named Ishan Vajpai. And, you know, kind of looking through their website, they've got a pretty extensive lineup for a micro brand. They're an internet-only micro brand. So they don't, you know, have retailers or storefront. But they've got a pretty extensive lineup for such a small brand. They've got, you know, Pilot's watches that are pretty handsome. They've got a pretty sharp looking Mecha Quartz chronograph, sort of an aviation themed chronograph. They've got a dive watch that's sort of named after an island, Havelock in the Andaman Islands. Of course, they've got this Terra kind of as a field watch. And then they've got another one called the Everest, which is kind of styled after the Smith's watch that Edmund Hillary wore in the 50s. And then they've got some dress watches. And these are all extremely affordable watches, as you can attest, you know, largely based on, you know, kind of the cost of doing business in India. Is just the labor is less. And so they're able to kind of capitalize on that. And they're using some quartz and Miyota automatics in their watches. But I would say, and you know, I haven't followed this brand and I wasn't even aware of it until you introduced this watch last time. But this watch particularly, I think is the watch that has kind of catapulted them or will catapult them. You know, it's already sold out. It's really kind of put them on the map. I've already seen there are a couple of other reviews out there about this one. So, I'm really eager to get your hands-on take on this because, just up front, I'll just say I'm quite smitten with this one. I love how different it is.
Yeah. This is one, first of all, that I will probably have in my bag or in my pocket anytime you happen to cross paths, if you want to see it in Chicago, I'll have it with me. It's exceptionally cool. I paid for this watch. I paid the full price for this watch. I'll break down every dollar that I spent on it. Not that many dollars. Kind of makes some of the straps I buy embarrassing, given I got a full titanium watch of a custom modern design for less than what most straps cost, certainly about the cost of what people would call like a premium NATO these days. And I have no contact at DWC. I would love to get in contact with these guys. We'd love to chat with them on the show. All of that kind of stuff would be amazing. But right now, I saw this watch online, and then I saw it again a few times on the TGN Slack. And I thought, you know what? One, not a big investment. Two, I'm a junkie. And you're offering me a new type of hit for, again, not that much money. I like the style. It's a super sort of brutalist take on a field watch. I don't know a better way to describe it than that. I have shot photos. So if you go to the show notes for this episode, you can go to thegrenado.com. You can go to the Substack, or if you're a subscriber to the Substack, paid or otherwise, you will have it in your email. And there will be a little gallery of images that I shot. And then, of course, we will link to their website. This is not a watch that you can buy anymore. It was sold as part of a fifth anniversary for the brand in titanium. I'll get into how I bought it. I talked about it on a previous episode. But let's start with maybe just some raw specs. So this is a rectangular watch, a little longer than it is wide. It's grade 2 titanium. It is 32 millimeters wide, 44 millimeters long, and 9.6 millimeters thick. It is inspired by a carabiner. So there are two channels. One opens on each side of the top and bottom of the case that you slide a elastic strap into. So think of it, you know, in really simple terms, imagine an FXD or the CWN1, but with no curvature. And instead of being, you know, kind of like a channel style where you have to go through the lugs, you can take an elastic and kind of route it into each one. They kind of have like a little hook design that keeps it in place. Again, this is something I definitely recommend you go to the show notes and take a peek at what it looks like, whether you check their website or my photos. They actually have quite excellent photos on their website. This case was machined by DWC from Grade 2 Titanium using borrowed equipment. That's incredibly punk rock, and I love it. It has a standard sort of, I believe, a mineral glass crystal and a 316L stainless steel case back. It uses a Citizen Miyota GL32 quartz, which is hours, minutes, seconds. There's no date. It has kind of a simple loom application that they're calling a vintage Japanese loom. 30 meters of water resistance. It comes on a black parachute style strap, which is, you know, like a paratrooper with a sort of tongue or a sort of loop over through a hook closure. I got it on, I don't wear a black strap, so I swapped it out immediately for a really nice yellow option from Redux & Co. that also fits beautifully. The quote-unquote lug width, although there's not really lugs and there's no spring bars, and you could probably cram a slightly wider strap in. It looks like it's meant for 20. 18 would work fine. My guess is 22 might even fit in, although it might catch on some of the edges. And then the total cost was 3,999 Indian rupees, which puts us at $42. International shipping was another 2,000 RS, so you're at $21 for that. And then for those really keeping score, I paid another $22 to DHL for importing it, but $14 of that was their service fee, and they should be embarrassed. Yeah. It was like $3 in taxes, and the rest was like a variety of fees, and then I think a duty as well on there. all in, I guess that puts me at about $80, $83 for this watch. And for that, I'm absolutely thrilled. It's a hard watch to describe without looking at images, so I encourage you to go check images. But it is a square of a chocolate bar, super flat. There's no curvature in the case at all. And the elastic comes up off your wrist, hooks around the case, and then goes under the back. So that 9.6 millimeters ends up being closer to the very low tens once you factor for the strap going through. And then because you have a strap and sort of like a coin case back that doesn't sit flush, it sits on top or, you know, in addition to the back of the titanium. It doesn't sit very low for its sizing, but it doesn't weigh anything either. And because it's fairly short lug to lug, like 44 millimeters, it's a very weird experience because wearing it, you don't notice it at all. It's quite comfortable. It doesn't really catch on stuff. But when you look at it, you go, what is wrong with this thing? It kind of sits up. It's very weird. I included some photos showing the profile in the show notes. So kind of check that out. It sits up kind of proud, but I mean, I really like the aesthetic. And like I said, I mostly bought this for the buzz that I got from being part of it. It's a little awkward aesthetically on your wrist, but it wears quite nicely. You know, how much can somebody really complain about a $42 watch? This is a bit like seeing a band from a genre that you know. I think I know a fair bit about titanium watches, right? But from an entirely different part of the world, maybe even in a different language, like the translation is so different than what you might expect if you're coming from, a titanium Hamilton or a Bertucci or, you know, some of the other international sort of perspectives on a titanium field watch. And so in my mind, this is a little bit more in the aesthetic of like the Seiko Fieldmaster Contra, which were these kind of square units that click together. I've become obsessed with the Contra because I love the Breitling UTC modules that they would make where, you know, the bracelet would connect to a little square of metal that had another watch or a digital display in it. They're so kind of funny and serious or unserious, but also very serious at the same time. And this kind of falls into that same space. And then again, you get, you know, for the 40 some odd dollars, it has a signed crown, has a pretty nice dial, quartz movement's pretty straightforward and easy to deal with. Yeah, I dig it. I dig it quite a bit, actually. I've been wearing it way more than how my first kind of 5 minutes with it was. When I first put it on, I was like, oh, well, I'm not out that much.
Yeah. The low price immediately sets you up for to be not impressed, but it's like if your expectations are low, you can just be absolutely wowed and blown away by something that you normally otherwise wouldn't be.
Even if your expectations are kind of high.
Yeah.
Like I didn't expect it to wear kind of the way it does, like a little bit lifted up off the wrist. And look, a little bit of curvature would make it quite a compelling thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it would kind of maybe lose some of that charm.
Yeah.
And I think the stakes are just super low, which is kind of nice.
Have you had a chance to put this on a scale? I didn't look on the website to see if they list the weight of it, but
I can go find a scale.
I'm just curious.
Be right back.
Yeah.
All right. So Sarah is in the middle of a lot of bread baking currently. We're sourdough season's back, I guess. So my scale is covered in flour.
But that might affect the reading here.
I teared it with the flour on it. We're good. So watch with no strap, 34 grams.
Wow.
Add in the strap, you're at 41. So pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty light. I'm trying to see what else I've got here by comparison. Aqualand Duplex, no strap, 61.
Okay.
And Aerospace with the poly mesh, 56.
Wow.
So Aqualand is a little chunky fella.
Yeah.
But, man, I love that watch, too. I've got a lot of titanium watches here. Things are going good for James these days. I don't know. This makes me excited and happy in the idea that someone out there is making something like this. And, look, it could have. I think they could have charged more for it. We can get into what it was like to buy it, if that's something. I talked about it a little bit on our episode where we were kind of covering elements of the Royal Pop launch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because my point to Swatch and all that kind of thing was that this could have been sold online. You can sell something very popular online. DWC had said they were expecting upwards of 30,000 plus people to try and get one of these.
Wow.
And I think they made 5,555 of them, according to my case back.
Wow, good for them. Jeez.
Yeah, very cool. And basically, you had to be on the page at a certain time. It was like 11 p.m. or something, or maybe 10:30, whatever the time was. And then as long as you were on the page, you would then get thrown into like another page digitally, which would decide if you were going to be within the buyer's group. You'd be given a number. And then you basically just watch that number come down to zero. And that was when you were able to click whatever on PayPal and buy it. It was very simple.
Oh, yeah.
And if your number was high enough, you would know fairly quickly that you weren't going to get one.
Mm-hmm.
I found it to be a very smooth process. I didn't have a scenario where it was in my cart and then by the time I paid for it and went back, it wasn't there anymore, which is obviously a huge frustration point you read about for some of these kind of limited edition or very hard to buy drops.
Yeah.
I understand that this was in exceedingly large scale demand The experience, I mean, I guess I got lucky enough to get one. But the experience was really pretty smooth. And if I was going to be selling a watch into this sort of existence, you know, this much demand, I would probably look to emulate exactly what they did for it. And kudos to them to make a bunch of them, especially, you know, like they said, like they they made it on borrowed equipment.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I'm looking at your photo. I've got it on a big monitor here. The first image that in your collection is this wrist shot on the yellow strap. And I'm just struck by some of the little details, you know, the shape of the crown. And then these besides the cutouts for the strap, there are those diagonal cutouts that are just purely...
There's like two reliefs.
Yeah, just two reliefs, just for visual interest. And they really make all the mm-hmm. difference, because without those on there, it would look a little more brutish. And I think that mm-hmm. that just adds an element of visual interest to it. And then you've got this dial, this round dial in this very square case that is... It's very much like an instrument aesthetic. And the whole thing, obviously, just looks like a tool. And it reminds me of... In some way, I'm sure they're still making watches. And I used to quite like them. I'd forgotten that I even was into this brand before I was really into watches, and that was Nixon.
Sure.
I had, you know, Nixon used to kind of make watches, I wouldn't say like this, but they used to make interesting shaped watches. And I had one, I believe it was called the Key. And it had some, I don't know if it was the crown. It had some piece on the side that would use the same key that would, or little wrench that would be used to change the fin on a surfboard, because Nixon was kind of a surf culture watch.
Yeah, sure. It's a bit of a gimmick, but it makes sense.
And it had an interesting shape to the case, and I really loved that watch. It had a very sporty appeal. And this watch, as I'm looking at it, brings me back in my mind in a very warm, nostalgic way to the time before I was really into watches, and I just liked something for the way it looked. And just yep. kind of the way it, the feeling it evokes. And I think this is, like I said earlier, very low stakes, visually interesting, something that, you know, you just didn't spend a lot of money on, but like can bring you a lot of joy without even feeling like this is a watch with a capital W. And that I say that with the, you know, utmost respect and admiration for what they've done here. I'm just thrilled with this. And I wish I had known about these, you know, when they were available, because, and maybe I can find one secondhand or something, but it's just the kind of piece that I could just see throwing on and just deriving immense pleasure from just looking down at my wrist. It's just it's a really, really neat object, not even a watch.
Yeah. You know me, I love a good analogy or metaphor or whatever. And the one that kept coming back to me is like, this is the sort of watch where, like I said, maybe you know the genre of the band, but you've never heard of them before. And, you know, maybe they're from a different town, maybe they're from a different part of the world entirely, but you get to see the concert for not that much money. It's not like going to see your favorite band, big name band. It's now hundreds of dollars. It's a whole thing to go see it. This is just a show down the street or at your favorite club in the city or whatever. And I remember years ago I went and saw, it would have been Mother and Said the Whale and The Wooden Sky at the Casbah. In Hamilton, Ontario for $10. I remember because I think it was like I had $15 and I was able to do the concert and a beer.
Oh yeah.
Because a friend of mine was driving, and I remember seeing that, and I still listen to Mother. I'm a huge Wooden Sky fan, and I bet you Said the Whale still gets sort of semi-frequent play in my home or on my phone and that sort of thing. Yeah, I think if I'd gone to the brand's website and go, oh yeah, they're making, you know, if I'd gone to Delhi Watch Company's website, I said, oh, they're making like largely conventional watches. I can understand most of these, mm-hmm. but there's not something there where if you're as sort of seasoned or maybe jaded is more the right word. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
For me, where I go, oh wait, that's something I don't know. And as soon as I saw this, I go, well, one more second. I want to take a closer look. I'm going to click that link.
Yeah.
And I'm super happy that I did. And I think they could have gotten away with it costing more. I think they probably could have made weirdly at 4,000 rupees. It's really maybe neither of those were the point around right in the middle of their price point for some of these. I'm seeing stuff at 12,000, 7,000, 6,000, you know, they've got the DWC Heritage, like a dress watch, pretty good looking design there for 8,500, rupees, which is, $90. I mean, like in my mind, this doesn't feel that different than the times you read about, you know, the Chinese chronograph with the seagull movement, or the few times that I've bought a Vostok, right? It scratches that same sort of itch, but those are very traditional, conventional watches.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
What I'm so excited about this is this doesn't look like anything else I've got. It's titanium. It's inspired by, like, I think quite effectively inspired by a carabiner, which is like, who thought of that? A watch and a carabiner, like they're not, mm-hmm. not really, I guess up into maybe the Royal Pop is also sort of a carabiner adjacent. You're supposed to clip that to yourself. I'm not sure. At least this is meant for your wrist. I could definitely see this looped into the strap of a backpack.
Oh yeah.
You know, hanging on your backpack or something like that. So in the right setting, I could see that being used more like a piece of field equipment or that sort of thing, or a second watch. If you're, let's say, doing an extended hiking, camping scenario, that sort of stuff. I'm just super impressed by it. I really, really like it. And I'm glad that I got one.
Yeah, it's great. I'm looking at the rest of their collection and all very handsome watches, but nothing that would make me, you know, queue up or even pull the trigger on the chronographs of the divers. They're all fine, but that one just in the middle, you know, the photo of that one right in the middle of all the others that they sell is just, it just pops. It just stands out. And it just makes me happy that there are designers out there that are still kind of stretching things and coming up with stuff like this. And I hope they do more. I hope other brands just take chances like this. When you were talking about the Seiko Fieldmaster, you know, the Contra watch, I was trying to remember. I know that there is a brand, Redux, that's making kind of a version of that just looks great. And as I'm looking at this, I'm like, well, I missed out on this one. Maybe I should, you know, look at getting one of those or something. Just something that you know, maybe you don't wear often, but like you put it on and it's just pure fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Redux stuff is great. That's what the actual strap I'm wearing this DWC on. And the one thing I would add, and it's the main reason that I wanted to do an on paper on wrist, because obviously we know and have learned quite firsthandedly recently that people are super sensitive about using their attention for things that they can't even buy or be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this titanium one is gone, but there is a steel version that is coming up in the future. It will be a millimeter or nearly a millimeter thinner. It will have more water resistance, and they're looking to improve the clasp as well.
Okay.
It looks like they've already said the pricing will be 4,499 rupees for a sandblasted or vertically brushed. And there'll be a DLC version, which I think might be really cool in full black for 5,000 rupees. So that puts us, $48 will be the starting price on that one. You'd probably have at home, even with DHL taking their lion's share of nonsense in the additional shipping, you'd probably have at home for under $100. And this is also feels distinctly like the type of watch that you could use to get somebody else into watches. Whether it's a young guy or gal who are, you know, looking for something effective but different, maybe it suits their overall style, or if it's something that you could kind of expand where you've got a friend that likes the Apple Watch and likes their you know, fabric strap or whatever, but this would give them something else to wear when they don't want the notifications, all that kind of stuff. We'll have to see what the production will be for the steel one. Given the size, the shape, the rest of it, I don't think it matters that much, titanium to steel. I like titanium for just kind of vibes. Like I have a lot of titanium watches and I enjoy it. And I think it's such a great metal for a watch. But steel is also great, and it has a great history, obviously. So, like I said, this is kind of a little bit like punk rock watchmaking. This is impact over ergonomics. It's inexpensive. It's kind of challenging in terms of the norms and what you might expect and other watches that you have. It's not going to be like that. But for me, it's like very exciting. I love that it was made with borrowed equipment. I love that this is what they came up with after 5 years. And I just really dig it. I love that it's from a part of the world I don't know that well, but clearly loves watches and is part of the community, and I think had a real impact with this design. And I'm pumped to hopefully see more of them around, whether they're the steel ones or these more initial titanium ones. But a cool thing, and I would say a huge shout out to the team at DWC. Just impressive and fun and exciting and really just pure entertainment. Good stuff.
Yeah, and I guess my last point about this too is that for the price, $42 is absurdly low, and there's so much that we buy every week, you know, for that amount of money that is just purely disposable and kind of, you know, you might buy it on a whim and then realize, oh, this is kind of junky plastic, whatever it might be, you know, gadget or, you know, even a strap or whatever that you take a flyer on and then you don't like it and it goes in a drawer and you end up tossing it, you know, or giving it away. Like, this is $42 for something that okay, we're not talking, you know, even probably, well, I was going to say citizen quality, but maybe it is, or, you know, certainly not in the high end realm, but like, this is something that like is legitimately functional and could last for many years and it could be passed on and used by you or others for a long time for that amount of money. And for that, it's a very honorable product. I think that's great.
Whether or not $42 is the right amount for the watch is going to be totally subjective. Mm-hmm. But think about the fervor that we had for $280 for the Moon's watch.
Yeah.
This is a normal, quote unquote, normal watch from a servicing standpoint. You put another battery in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Heck, I even went ahead and did the research just out of interest. Let's say the movement died.
Oh, sure.
You can buy a single movement for $8.
Wow.
And just have it replaced if you needed to. Like, there's just a different thing where this feels like it was made for enthusiasts, and look at the response that they got.
Yeah.
And that's not to say this, the of course, the Moon's watch is made for enthusiasts. But if you had those complaints about, oh, it's plastic, oh, it can't be serviced, it's this or that,
mm-hmm.
you can get very excited about this for a fraction of the cost.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think I'm less than $100 Canadian all in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for that, I'm going to wear it all summer. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm in my square watch summer, I guess, between this and the Bell & Ross.
Oh, right.
obviously, neither are actually squares. Maybe we call them rectangle watch summer, whichever you like. But yeah, I'm just impressed. I like being able to get excited about something like this. This is the sort of thing where if my brothers are like, oh, I don't want to wear this, my smartwatch, or I don't want to wear, you know, my brother Tim has the Hodinkee Mito. And if they just wanted a weekend watch, especially if they're upping the water resistance on the steel one,
yeah.
Where, I mean, let's be clear, 30 meters, I'm going to treat it like it's 30 meters. It's going in the lake this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
But especially if we get to a point where it was, where you've got even more sort of sport watch bona fides built into it.
Mm-hmm.
Really impressive thing. And then if there's ever a Gen 2 down the road where they curve the lug down
mm-hmm.
at a slight angle,
yeah,
I think you'd have a really compelling field watch that would wear like a conventional watch and have nothing like the footprint of a conventional watch in terms of the way it would look on your wrist. I get a little grin every time I look down to check the time, for sure. But yeah, it's a delight.
Do your kids like it? I bet they do.
My kids almost never say anything about my watches, especially if they're like, you know, dark titanium,
yeah.
just kind of a watch.
Yeah.
It has to be bright. It has to be colorful. And I had it on the yellow strap. And the day I went and picked them up from school, and my youngest daughter was like, oh, that's a cool watch. I like that. And I was like, all right, we're onto something here. This is fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's a lot about one watch. I'll eventually have I'm going to do a story for Hodinkee as well, but this episode kind of allowed me to collect my thoughts. And I wanted to talk about it with you because it was a watch that I think I mentioned to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now maybe you get a better idea, and I can't wait to show it to you when I see you in July.
Yeah.
I would go out on a limb and say, I feel very similarly about this watch at $40 or $50 as I do at $2,200 or so for the Ming bracelet.
Mm.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
It's something I haven't experienced before. It's titanium. It represents a different way of thinking about manufacturing and producing and connecting it to a product. I feel very similar about the same two, so which gives you some idea of how kind of messed up my brain is when it comes to dollars in the watch world.
Yeah.
But I think this is an exciting thing, and I'll definitely, you know, definitely keep the developments on the radar. Hopefully, Jason, you and some of the folks listening that are keen can snag a steel one when they come out.
Yeah, I'll keep an eye out for that. Yeah, I guess I've got one last question, and it's, you know, I should have asked this earlier, but it's, you know, given that this is TGN and we're kind of loom junkies, how is the loom on this? Have you worn it at night yet?
I have, yeah. The loom is fine. It's very light markings where like the Arabic numerals are loomed, the hands are loomed.
Mm-hmm.
The hands are quite functional,
mm-hmm.
especially coming in from the sunlight. That sort of thing seems to work fine. I wouldn't say it's like, it's not a dive watch, you know?
Yeah.
The markers are quite a bit smaller, and there's less loom on it, but definitely functional. And again, at the price point, it could be worse and you wouldn't really fault it.
Mm-hmm.
Better than I expected. And of course, there's leaf blowing in the background. So I apologize if that's the case. if you can hear what sounds like a leaf blower and a lawnmower going at the same time. That's where we're at with the DWC.
Must be summer.
Sorry, I'm very distracted by the noise in the background.
All right. Well, that was great. Thanks for the intro, and hope people enjoyed that one. I think it's going to be a popular one in a really strange way, but really fun. And with that, why don't we move into final notes and wrap up this episode? What do you have for us?
And mine can actually be quite easy because I've already mentioned on the show a couple of times, and it's currently on my wrist. It is the RDX Paratrooper strap with titanium hardware. It is a $59 strap. So obviously I've yet again put a strap that's worth more money than the watch. I think I did that with the Ming on the Aerospace, and now I've done it with the DWC Terra, but I think it's perfect. It's a great strap with a very simple sort of experience from the paratrooper elastic styling, where you have a sliding metal adjustment keeper with a little tab, like a larger opening, and then a hook closure on the other end. Wrap it on your wrist and put it on, and you're done. I find it quite comfortable. It works really well on a variety of watches. And, you know, yes, you are paying a premium for this over the stuff with the more simple closure, or like the knockoff Erica straps. But in this case, you are getting titanium hardware, which I kind of like. And definitely if we're going to match it with the Terra, again, not so much on the price point, but definitely on the materials, it just kind of wears perfectly. And I'm absolutely a fan. So that's my recommendation today. The paratrooper strap with titanium hardware from Redux & Co.
Yeah, I might have to pick up one of these. I like the kind of the chunkier, oversized kind of grain, or, you know, the weave on these compared to some others. It looks really nice. And you know what makes me think, like, it's really cool that this will fit on the Terra because of those slots, mm-hmm. The kind of the strap mounting slots. But I was trying to remember what that Terra watch reminded me of. And I believe there are some of these paratrooper style straps, not from Redux, but I believe Erica sells them, that can be used with something like an FXD that has kind of closed strap channels. And you feed the strap through the adjustment buckle, like the strap channels on the Terra. That's what it reminds me of. I was trying to think the whole episode. I was trying to think of what that reminded me of, and now it just came to me. But that's a bit of a tangent.
I've used this strap for my CWN1, and it works nicely. You just have to remove that sliding keeper, take it all the way off, slide it on, then put the keeper back on, and then it just wears like an open NATO. I'm sure there's other ways of wearing it as well. I don't even use the keeper. There's like a fabric keeper. I removed that and I just tuck the tail.
Yeah.
I have it route underneath rather than over, which I think is probably what they intended. They make a handful of nice straps. They also a while back sent us the reverse Horween Cordovan with titanium hardware.
Yes.
If it's budget, that's a really nice strap for the CWN1 or any watch with sort of a channel lug, something you like to use a leather NATO on. They make some really nice straps. I haven't checked out their watches, but now I'm keen because you brought it up that they kind of were in the same aesthetic as the Contra. It's a full-size watch, to be fair. It's not like a little chainable unit, but I do really like, and like I said, if I'm in my square watch summer sort of scenario here, I am eyeballing this Honor, Honor A9 in titanium. It's a good-looking watch for sure.
Yeah.
Cool company.
Yeah.
All right, what have you got for us today?
All right, I feel like we got a bit of a kind of paratrooper instrument style watch kind of theme going here, and I've got a video actually. This is another from a series of videos that the New Yorker puts up on YouTube, free for all to watch. You don't need a subscription. This one popped up in my feed. It's called the Ukrainian stunt pilot hunting Russian drones, and caught my eye. The title itself sounded really interesting. Again, you know, you talked about punk rock, and this just feels like, you know, there have been so many stories that have kind of come out of the conflict in Ukraine and the Russian invasion and kind of the resistance to that feel like such homegrown, kind of innovative workarounds and ways of kind of fighting back. And this is just another example of that. It's this guy who was a really talented stunt pilot, you know, flying like these little aerobatic planes, who when the war started and you know, the drone warfare that's really kind of devastated a lot of Ukraine and done a lot of damage and killed people, you know, required this kind of innovative solution, and this guy took his piloting skills to fly a plane, you know, with others that are using heat sensitive, you know, tracking missiles and things to kind of chase these drones and then shoot them out of the sky. And it's really quite interesting. I think it's about a 6-minute video or so. And just a really kind of inspiring and cool video. So you can check that out.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I'm barely paying attention as you're talking, as I'm watching this video. The visuals are absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
I have it muted because I didn't want to entirely miss when the cadence of your voice suggesting it was my turn to speak. But man, this is insane. I got to pause this. This is very exciting. Yeah, what a cool thing.
Yeah.
I've been reading a ton about like FPV drones and all the drone technology. And then I was learning about the fiber optic drones, which is how they control them most commonly as weapons. Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. Yeah. I traded just a few texts in the last couple of days with Robert Spangl, who's just leaving there for, I'm not sure how many times he's been out to Ukraine, but he said that most of the front line is essentially inaccessible unless you're prepared to be part of the battle scene. Because of the proliferance of these fiber optic drones and stuff like that. So if you want to see it firsthand, you can always follow Robert's Instagram. We'll put it in there. He was writing me because he's going from Ukraine to Italy for PD. And we always do the PD Uomo watch spotting. So two different topics. Yeah. He's a man of many interests and concerns.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a fascinating one. I can't wait to do that. And I love that the New Yorker puts these up for free.
All right. Well, that was a fun episode. Fun to revisit On Paper, On Wrist.
One episode about a funky watch, for sure.
All right. Well, as always, thanks so much for listening. If you want to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or consider supporting the show directly, and maybe even grab a new TGN-signed NATO, please visit thegreynato.com. Music throughout, A Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from Eleanor Roosevelt, who said, "The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams."